What does it mean to have a book selected by the one book committee? Because that's kind of a different thing. That means they saw themes in your book that they thought would lead to intricate and widespread discussion.
Yeah, I think it has to do with, when I set out to write the book, I felt like it was a book I had to write, and sort of called to write, and something that had been bothering me for a long time about unsolved murders, about injustice, about impunity, about things that are never investigated. And so I feel like, when we think about something that's an injustice, something that's never come to justice, like the civil rights era cold cases and murders that the book is interested in exploring, I think we think about a perpetrator sort of twiddling their mustache. You know what I mean? That it has to do with finding the villain, finding the killer, but it's much more complicated than that. It's about people that enable this to happen. It's about what happened before the moment historically and what happens after. It's about all of the circumstances and forces that make it possible for somebody to, commit a racially motivated killing and for that never to be brought to justice. And so I think the country is very interested in talking about the larger circumstances now, and not reducing it to whodunit.
If you weren't living in the area and had the opportunity to see Mississippi, could you see a world in which the novel was set in a different place? And would it have worked as well had it been in a different area?
No, it would have been a very different book. I mean, I think the book is a lot about the Mississippi Delta. I mean, Mississippi is a somewhat, it's sometimes the butt of a joke, the lowest in education and poverty, and somewhat reviled and sort of, misnamed. And so I think the Delta is this lush place in the Deep South where it's this landscape that's beautifully green. Has some of the most fertile soil, I think, as the Nile. But at the same time, it's desolate. There are lots of abandoned houses and farms and little towns that are just vestiges of what they once were. But I think because of the poverty, you don't have people tearing buildings down and putting up new complexes. Like what was is still standing. And so when I was there, I really felt like history is in the air, like it's palpable, you can feel it. Down this road, it's 1890, up this road, it's 1931. And so I feel like it's a place that is also very storied. Like people who live there are storytellers and they've also lived there for generations. So their lives are very, and their histories are very intertwined with each other. And so I think the story is really about the Mississippi Delta, about the Deep South. So it had to be placed there.
This country has had a real reckoning about race relations over the past year plus in a way that it hasn't even in recent times. Is this more pronounced in the South? Is it something you have to deal with more there, or is it something that is politely ignored?
I think it's something that the South has long known about, and that is more overt there. But I think that there is more of an acceptance of, this is the way things are, have been, and that, the power dynamics, the racial power dynamics, who has the wealth is very clear and has been clear. Even when Black folks got the vote in the South, they didn't get the money. There was white flight and people moved to the suburbs, taking their taxes with them. So even cities in the South, Mississippi has, I think, the highest Black population in the country, even though, they have a large percentage of the vote, their candidates usually don't win. I mean, they're maybe on the local level, that's different, but not on the state level. And so I think in the South, race relations are more overt, but at the same time, it's different because there's an intimacy. Like if you grew up with you know, if you grew up in the 60s and your best friend as a kid was black, or your best friend was white and you were black, they would be your best friend until you turned about 13. And then one of your parents or their parents would say, well, you can't be friends with this person anymore. And so you grow up watching other people grow up, your family's intertwined, maybe these black folks work for your family. And so you have an intimacy, but at the same time, the social distance, you know, who, I don't mean actual social distance, but the people, you know, the social order is still very much intact. You know, who's going to what school, who's going to a private academy, who's going to have opportunities, who has gas for their car. You know, it's still very much entrenched, but at the same time, you have this strange kind of intimacy because you know each other so well that you don't necessarily get in the Northeast or in cities.
There's a mystery at the heart of the novel, so I don't want to get into specifics, but did you know the end before you started writing The Gone Dead?
Yes, sort of. I knew that there was going to be a confrontation between the protagonist, Billy James, and the man who was centrally responsible for her father's death. I didn't know what was going to happen in that room, but I knew that they were going to enter a room, and that she would come out changed.
What was the first part of this book that you came up with? Was it the protagonist? Was it the plot? Can you remember just that initial creative spark?
I think it was, you know, it took actually a long time for me to get the protagonist, Billy, to really get her voice. You know, did I want it to be in first person or third person? Did I want it in present tense or past tense? To really understand who she was. But I think the situation of the stranger returning home, like returning home to a place you don't remember, and the idea that pivotal, consequential events took place in your life as a child that you don't remember, but your body remembers, but you know, a part of you remembers, but you cannot consciously remember what happened. You just have these stories. That was one of the first sparks that some, you know, traumatic event had happened that shaped her life that she couldn't remember, but other people could. So the fact that other people could hold your secrets was compelling to me.
You're a professor at Rhodes. It's often said about great athletes that it's hard for them to be coaches because not everyone's Michael Jordan. When you teach your students, is it harder or easier when you recognize some of yourself in one of them, when you see great talent? Because as you know, great talent doesn't always necessarily equal even a career in writing, period, much less anything beyond that.
I think the thing that I look for other than beyond talent is perception, because I've, you know, had students where, you know, the first story they turn in to me is terrible. You know, it's just like a Western that's very stereotypical, that's not really deep, that's not really about anything, that's not really engaging with any kind of deeper or larger questions. And then, you know, I might show them another writer and say, you know, it'd be interesting if you took on this kind of perspective, or if you took on this kind of voice, or if you played with this. And they sort of come into themselves and they find their voice, and then they write something really daring and really inspired. So, you know, they're so young that I feel like I was a terrible writer at 19, at 22. And so I think what I'm trying to do is show them the possibilities of fiction, like what it can do, what it can be, all the different kind of genres, all the different forms you can write in, and try to kind of prompt them to explore and just generate. And in doing that, to try to build their perception of their own work. Like, ideally, you want to be able to read your own work like a reader, so you can sort of stop and revise and try to get the desired effect. You're trying to take this sort of like dream story you have in your head and transfer it into somebody else's brain. So in order to do that, you have to kind of get out of the way of yourself and develop this kind of perspective, which I think is a muscle. And so when I see students who are really perceptive about the stories we read or other people's work, I think they're getting there. You know, they're starting to understand, they're starting to really flex that muscle. And so, you know, they just need to connect it now to their own work, to their own, you know, voice and language and world. It just sort of takes them figuring out, what is it I do well? And everybody has something as a writer that they kind of plug into and do well.
Could you give listeners an idea of what you'll be speaking about as part of your one book presentation?
So I'll be reading some excerpts from the book, and I'll be talking about place and history, and how that sort of can intersect with our present moment.
Are you working on anything at the moment?
I'm working on a third novel, but that's sort of all I want to say about it now.